Okay, welcome to the Lively in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 73, and as always, I have here with me Arthur Sorensen. Arthur Sorensen with his noisy computer fan, or not?
Sometimes, yeah. Hopefully not most of the time.
Yeah, okay, let's see. But we are here to talk about some interesting topics that have been happening in the JavaScript world. And we are going to just give a quick review of the topics. Let me share some screens here. Okay, I think you can see it now, right? Give a brief update on WebAssembly. As we have been mentioning in the past, WebAssembly is a language like assembly that is browser independent. It is meant to somehow run JavaScript code faster. So JavaScript code will be compiled into WebAssembly and it will run on the browsers faster. So the next topic that we will comment, just to mention that async and await, which are features of ECMAScript 6, are finally available in Firefox, at least nightly build. So that is the news. Next, we are going to talk about a package that is basically a query and a transformation language that is used to manipulate JSON data. So it's called JSONator, the package. Then we talk about Turbo.js, which is, let me scroll here, which is a library. I think there was some other library similar or for similar purpose, which is to control how to execute tasks using the GPU from JavaScript. So you can perform tasks much faster, taking advantage of the GPU that may be running on your machine. Then we will be talking about debug your DOM history using Warlong.js. So basically, it will allow you to see what changes happen to your pages, what DOM nodes were changed throughout a period of time. And finally, we have an interesting article about something that I'm not yet sure how it works, but it seems interesting. It's all over Graphic.js. It's a Windows component to implement all over Graphic applications. But we'll get back to see that in a moment. Now we are going to start again talking again about WebAssembly. We have talked about WebAssembly before, but it was something that was in progress.
Yeah, before WebAssembly was always a standard to do this by basically nothing tangible. But now, as we see in this preview, in this announcement, there is a preview for it actually. So what it should do, it should allow you to create one binary that would be run in any browser very efficiently. I tried to find any browser-related implementation tutorials and couldn't find any. There are just tutorials on the GitHub how to compile itself and convert the code and then build this environment and how to use it. So I don't think you can really use it in the browser specifically right now, only through the WebAssembly, some kind of executable.
Yeah, well, I was hoping for it. Says the browser at the end of browser preview period, the binary version will be reset to 0x1, whatever that means.
Next version, I guess.
I don't know. So is there anything that we can see, or just talking about something?
No, as I said, I don't think you can do anything in the browser. You actually need to pull the repository, compile it with CMake, use CMake to build everything, and then you can use the executable to convert some code that you wrote to an executable, to binary, I think, and execute it maybe. Really not much to see yet, but the ones that are really interested in how this is going on, they can set up everything and try it out and provide feedback for the project, which I think they would really appreciate.
Yeah, this, I think, well, what would you expect? Would you expect to see maybe some benchmarks, code running?
I'm waiting, yeah, when I see the benchmarks comparing to the same SMGS and ECMAScript converted applications and stuff like that.
Yes, I guess I need to have one of those articles like in PHP Classes blog that compares the versions of PHP, the performance of PHP over time. So you'll see the evaluation of performance of JavaScript over time and compiling to WebAssembly. So for now, there is not much to say, but well, this is a project that is in progress. So moving on to the next topic, also to mention something briefly, which is about the async and await support that this time is available in Firefox. As I mentioned before, it was made available on Firefox, on Chrome. Before, it was just a specification for ECMAScript 6. So now it is available on,
I think,
Firefox too.
Yeah, I think if you would have a poll of ECMAScript features, then this was the most awaited one. So basically, this is the most wanted one. And I think most of the users who used some kind of transpilers to use the feature were using them specifically for this feature, because it's really easy, is the writing of the functions. Yeah.
Well, what I wonder if it is possible to have a transpiler that converts this second await code to something that runs in browsers that only support ECMAScript 5, also
yes,
as regular JavaScript. isn't it because it was something possible with the ECMAScript 5 already, probably with different names?
No,
maybe a library?
Not specifically. It just, I think it parses the code and does some execution order, like checks when the promises are resolved, and then with them continues executing the code or something like that. So it probably has some kind of hack, but it's probably ugly.
Yeah. So it's not the same thing, or it's just emulation?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, it's an emulation, and the syntax with async and await is much, much easier to read and understand and use,
yes,
than to use
that is for sure. What I meant is that if you can do it with ECMAScript 5, why aren't there libraries to implement that somehow?
There are. They are called transpilers.
No, those not transpilers. It's just something that converts your code. I mean, libraries that you could call from regular, like regular ECMAScript 5 code. It's weird. I don't know what gets in the way to implement this. Because what I understand by sync and await is that there is always an event loop.
Yeah.
That calls different sources of events, and if there is no event pending, it just slips like for a microsecond or yeah. until there is something new, until there is some data on a file to read or a network socket or something else. So I don't know. Maybe this could be implemented without even transpilers or not.
Yeah. Well, I think that, of course, it all can be implemented using the callbacks or promises, and it all have worked before, but it's an ugly solution. Async innovate does the same thing, only in much better syntax.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but well, even it is interesting because it seems they took some time to implement it.
Yeah. Oh, your browser supports it. Nice.
Yeah, because it's Chrome. Here is a demo. If your browser supports, natively you'll see yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, because if it was possible to do that with the library, maybe it could be a polyfill that we could use it already.
The problem so, is it because it's a separate syntax, it's a new syntax, and the language itself needs to understand it without parsing it before and interpreting yeah. it.
Right, but well, for instance, here in the example, it's a sync function. Maybe you could create a function named async, then put the parentheses here, and then if it is, I don't know, maybe I'm imagining things. Anyway, what are your plans? Can you use it already in the Node.js version that you are using, or not yet?
Not sure. I don't think we have gone that way yet. I have not checked, and I don't think anyone in our team uses it for now, because we are not using any transpilers, so...
You are using transpilers or not?
No, we are not.
But I think you mentioned somebody you knew used transpilers. It was not in your team.
No. Well, I have lots of friends, also just developers, and some of them were using, like, Babel and many stuff like that, because they couldn't wait for the... All the nice stuff.
So you are not eager to use async other way?
No, not yet.
We have not figured a good use case that it would be great to have.
Well, I don't know. Every new thing needs get used to time. Because we have some new members on the team that use the new ECMAScript features quite a lot, and when I review their code, it's actually much harder to grasp at first because I'm just not used to it yet. So that's probably why I'm still not using lots of stuff like function binding and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think it would be great, but. I know there is Facebook Hack that supports async in the way, but since I'm not using Facebook Hack, I'm not doing anything that could rely on async in the way. I don't know which could be good use cases for this. Maybe I could make a good use case like sending newsletters to many thousands of people. So instead of send one newsletter message after another, I could maybe create some routines that run in parallel, and it would be asynchronous code, and would run like 10 deliveries at the same time. And wait and see if I could gain any speed with that. Because sometimes it's not really a big advantage. I don't know.
Yeah, it's mostly that it would be easier to write. And everywhere where you need to execute lots of things in parallel and then wait until everything that ends and then continue some other code, the async await would come in handy. There are, of course, patterns of doing it, like async.js library or promises and stuff like that.
Yeah. I wonder what our big audience in the chat room thinks about this. So anybody that has opinions, feel free to tell us if you want to, are planning to use async and await once it becomes widely adopted, or you just probably would rather just do the things in the traditional way. Because it's really a thing that needs to be planned, not just something that here is a sync and await and your code will automatically run faster. Okay. So given this, the next topic. I have so many windows open that I even lost them. Well, the next topic is about JSON Arta, a query and transformation language to process JSON data. Well, for me, when I look at this, what it looked like, it's like XPath.
Yeah, I think they mentioned it in the description too.
Yeah. Or the regular selectors, but or no, it's not XPath, it's XSL. Remember that XSL?
No, I don't think so.
No, it was before the year 2000.
I wasn't a programmer that year yet.
So. That explains why you are very young. It was on when Microsoft decided that everything should be XML. So if you wanted to generate a page, you got some XML from which probably would be the database query results, and then you have XSL, XML. I don't know. Even. Then there will be XSLT, which basically would be to transform XML into something else. And I didn't see much future in that, but for a while Microsoft insisted on it. And even they even defined it SOAP as a standard for web services that is also based on XML. But that now that's a whole thing. I don't think you did you ever use anything of SOAP? Web services?
Not really, I think.
Yeah, it was too complicated to be useful. Why bother to build an XML just to pass a few parameters? And then JSON became more interesting for people to use to exchange data, because it is typed, it is portable, because most languages have some support to process JSON. But this library here seems to be something more, not just to parse, but also to transform, right?
Not transform maybe, but return results. I don't know, I have found here one tutorial on the GitHub page. And basically, so they provide an example object and then an expression which would provide specific output. At first, it all seems kind of very logical that you query some specific property or sub-properties, or even an array, you would query those specific elements, always good, all words, yeah, and all understandable.
But the tutorial is the one listed at the bottom.
Yeah. And then there are some expressions more interesting that, for example, if you have $sign that refers to the entire input document, like a root or document, root object, and then there are expressions with wildcards, and then there are predicates, and I think there were some kind of functions. to find if there was programming constructs, because in the end it all became so there are functions like uppercase, substring, sum. In the end it all became so complex that it needs some a bit of learning curve, but all in all, yeah, it's a nice feature. It kind of reminds me of what MongoDB has for aggregation framework. In their aggregation pipeline, you also need to learn how it exactly works, and then when you grasp it, you can do lots of interesting stuff with it. So this seems kind of similar to it.
Well, this seems very like XSLT. I didn't use it much, but it was from the days that people needed to process. I don't know, do you think you need to process JSON somehow in a way that would justify having a transformation language like this?
Well, the only thing I can come up when it would be quite needed is when you would want to provide an UI interface to process it, then your interface would generate these expressions and then you would execute them, and then it would be quite handy. All in all, if I would do it programmatically, I would do it programmatically without specific expressions, I think.
Yeah. I think people will end up doing programmatically and that's it. Well, that's what I think. I may be wrong. Well, it all got blank. But okay.
I can see your leaf coding screen right now.
It's in Inception.
No, it's okay actually. For some reason, it shows normally.
No, I'm confused. Which one is the window? No, okay. I switched the tab. Anyway, the next topic we would like to comment is this one, Turbo.js, which is basically a library that allows you to use the GPU and eventually perform certain tasks much faster. Hopefully, I don't know. This sounded interesting, but I'm not sure how it works.
I think what the only thing I can come up with how it works is that it has some kind of files your code into a shader and then executes it directly on GPU. So it transpiles from JavaScript to JLSL, I guess, the shader language, GSLS.
GLSL.
GLSL, yeah, sure, okay.
And what is GLSL, do you know?
It's a shader language, so how you write shaders modifying pixels directly.
Oh, I see. So is this just for graphics?
Well, it's usually used for graphics, but in this case it's used for calculation.
Yeah, I can see. Well, I think this may be interesting for people that have tasks that need to be repeated and go through lots of data, maybe some business intelligence map reduce tasks like that, and maybe they need to perform calculations on a bunch of data and could use a GPU, because a GPU is many CPUs in one to perform many tasks in parallel. Okay. Well, moving on to the next topic. Now, there is one interesting one, debugging your DOM history using Vorlon. So, Vorlon.js is a library. It allows you to... I'm not sure. You comment about Vorlon before, but, right?
I don't think so. I don't... At least I don't remember such functionality.
Okay. No, not this one of the... what it allows is to debug the DOM history. Well, anyway, what it allows is to change the DOM elements in a way that I mean, see the changes of the that happen in DOM elements, and the way I see it, it seems to show a lot of changes.
Yeah, so it's purely for debugging purposes. You use it and it reports all the changes, and then you can review them, what changed what and what went wrong. When.
Yeah. Do you see a great need for these kinds of things?
Well, debugging part is always kind of fishy on JavaScript. And well, personally, maybe I would not, I did not had any use for this, but I guess there could be some instances where it's easier to debug it this way. For example, maybe with all the reactive components or stuff like that.
This, does this mean you can put a breakpoint like stop when this element has some content?
No. Not sure. It says that you can go back in history and check how website looked exactly at that time. So probably something like that, yes.
That's interesting. This reminds me of that other debugging extension for PHP that would record the history and would allow you to see what changed. But in this case, it's more for DOM, not JavaScript variables and things like that.
Exactly.
Well, it's something interesting that, well, if there is something that can be useful, you may remember it one day. Okay, the next topic is also intriguing because it's about a library called Holographic JS. It says that it's for those that are interested in Microsoft HoloLens, Windows Holographic. I don't use Windows, so I'm not even sure what is this about.
So,
Windows, are you familiar?
With HoloLens, not, but basically it's a tech that would allow you to interact with 3D objects in real life, like 3D projecting and interaction with it. That's why it's holographic, it's HoloLens called or something like that. And basically what this library would allow you to do is to create these applications for this device with JavaScript. Let me maybe try to share a screen. So in reality, it's not a related to browser or anything that would be run on this device. And here is, for example, a boilerplate, a template on how to run JS code for this device. Yeah, so. You would probably need to build it and as a normal HoloLens application and then provide the JavaScript sources in separate file and run them, so something like this.
Yeah, I was looking here. I don't know if it is broadcasting, but anyway, I think that this is, I don't know, do you imagine any interesting applications of holographics?
I have seen some quite interesting ones, like for level designing purposes, it was quite interesting to see how they design and edit levels in the real world, 3D, and stuff like that. For architectural purposes, probably too. So not only for entertainment, maybe also for work. And recently, even, I think, Microsoft released an app that had quite good results mapping 3D objects. So basically, you go with like photographing an object from all the sides and it would map and create 3D projection of the object. It was also kind of...
I think I saw that. It's like it's a 3D scanner, right?
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
So all in all, it seems Microsoft are moving to the 3D world and you would soon be able to create applications for the HoloLens device and sure, why not? Why not in JavaScript? And I think, they want to have it with 3GS, the popular 3D manipulating library. So if you know 3GS, that probably it would be much easier for you to use this
Yeah. Yes, Mitch. L pointed with 3.js support.
Yeah. So
they want to make this library work with 3.js.
Yeah.
Okay.
It makes sense. It's the best for the 3D manipulation library for 3D manipulation.
Yeah, it's a C++ runtime component for hosting Windows holographics apps built in JavaScript. So I don't know. How does this integrate with the browser?
It does not integrate with the browser. It has nothing to do with the browser. It would run on the HoloLens device.
Oh, HoloLens. Oh, now makes sense. I was wondering if this is something that you could use on a mobile device with a browser.
It's specific so. Windows platform for this device, and it could run on it.
Yeah, but they could have some web applications working on this. They are talking about OpenGL.
Yeah, maybe eventually HoloLens would develop applications natively too.
Hello, welcome to the lately in
PHP Innovation Award.
In PHP and JavaScript Innovation Award podcast, we're going to comment as usual about the Innovation Award nominees and winners, starting from those that were nominated or published in September, then or they were nominated in October. Then in November the results come out, so we can comment on them. And for JavaScript, we have like 4 nominees. Arthur Switchens, would you like to comment?
Okay, let's start with JavaScript then. So, do you see my screen already?
Yeah, I was looking at the other screen, so I can see now.
Yeah, okay, great. So the first package I wanted to mention is DOM process, and it was developed by, doesn't show me the information, Everton de Rosa, so.
Yeah, he's from Brazil.
Yes, yeah. Sounds like Brazil. It's actually a simple package that can traverse the DOM elements. You just pass the parent node and 2 functions, one function which determines if the node should be processed, and other one to actually process it. I think we had an example here. So you just init it, pass the DOM, the node as a parent, and then the 2 functions to.
Yeah.
To process it and to determine if it needs to be processed or not. So it's kind of simple package, but if you're not using anything like, I know, jQuery and stuff like that, and need something minimal to do this, then you can reuse it.
Yes, this is more to traverse all the elements of the page and do something useful with them. Sometimes you are searching for something very specific that it's hard to match with a selector, or maybe you actually want to change something on the nodes.
And Everton got one downloadable ebook of choice by O'Reilly for this package. And the second package is View Resume, Build Reactive Web User Interfaces. It was developed by Sergey Beskorovaini from Ukraine, and I assume it's something based on Vue framework, which we have commented something about it in the last podcast. They have released the second version. Fortunately, I'm not much familiar with it. Maybe we can check.
This seems to be like an alternative to.
Yeah. So basically, it's the package that would allow you to build reactive web user interfaces. And in demo, I think the author shows his own page, which I assume is built in that interface, right? So single page with sections.
Well, it's a more general theme, but it's interesting to see the actual applications that take the advantage of that. Okay, on my behalf, I also like to comment on a couple of packages. One is an animated placeholder text.
Sharing, can you share your screen, please?
Oh, that would be useful. It's always a challenge because we need to find the right window to share. I guess you can see it now. Let me just increase the zoom level here. So, as I was saying, an animated placeholder package. It shows placeholders for text inputs that are animated. So this will help to get the attention. So the actual placeholder text will scroll with a message in it. Oh, it's a shame there is no demo this time, but it would be neat to see. But okay, you can imagine how it would work. This one was developed by Gianluca Ferrari from Italy, and for this he did not want to pick a prize. I remember that he was very happy with being nominated, but he did not need a prize. The other package that I want to comment, SnapWF, this is interesting because this makes calls to a database server that takes requests over HTTP. Usually through a proxy script like one written in PHP, but could be another language. And this package sends HTTP requests to perform usual CRUD operations, or get fields by value, first, last, previews, next row of a table, execute procedures, and so on. So this is interesting, despite it's very simple. As for the Innovation Award, JavaScript rankings have been kind of steady because not many packages have been submitted, but basically still Anderspot is in first place with 6 packages and 22 points, then followed by Dantini Francois with 5 packages and 18 points, Everton De Rosa with 2 packages and 7 points, Juan Jose of Spain with 1 package 6 points, is tied with Axel Hahn and Faru Rahim from Bangladesh. Then Carl Holtz from Canada is tied with Afshin Agar and Martin Latter and Evaldo Zimanekolan in 7th place with 5 points and 1 package. By country, it's more or less a mirror because here we can see that Hungary is in first with 6 packages and 22 points from Anderstoff, but France is closer, so it still has chances to pass Hungary with 6 packages and 21 points. And in third, there is Brazil with 4 packages and 14 points. Germany with 2 packages and 7 points is tied with Mexico, that also has 7 points, but 4 packages. Then Spain and Switzerland and Bangladesh are tied with 6 points in 6th place. And finally, Iran and Canada are tied in the 9th place with 5 points. So regarding the JavaScript Innovation Award, it is all this month. Okay, this is interesting. And with this, we practically ended this podcast and our monthly marathon. This is the last of the year, so yeah. I wish you all Merry Christmas. don't stuff yourself with the Christmas food. It's hopeless. Yeah. You will stuff yourself with Christmas food.
Everyone.
Yeah. Do you also have the tradition of eating a lots of types of food during Christmas?
Yes, I think not only Christmas, but also New Year and lots of eating.
Yeah, but you don't look fat.
I'm working out.
Or, because you are still waiting for Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy 2017. And we'll see you there in the other side.
Yeah, see you next year.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Bye.